live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Thursday afternoon here in Las Vegas. It is Cofield and Company here on ESPN Las Vegas. The company taking over here today. I am Jeff Parles alongside the one and only Adam Candy. Adam, I was going through my notes that for some reason I've kept all these years. This is the first show you and I have done together since 2021 on a different network. So I'm happy to be with you here today.
I feel exactly the same way, my friend. I'm glad for one thing, though. We used to have to be our absolute prettiest on camera. No more of that, buddy. We're just I'm where I belong, where you can't see my face.
No, I'll say this too. I am dressed a lot more comfortably than I would have been on that old
Amen
set.
Amen to that.
To say the very least, it's nice and cozy here in the studio. James is here with us as well. By the way, we'll hear from Cofield as well. He's on his way up to Boise. We'll hear from him and Matt Neverd later in the show. Of course, Thursday staples, Xavier Pope. Shannon Kelly will give us the report up in the Reno hour in the 4 o'clock hour. And of course, Scott Seidenberg joins us as well to give his best plays for the upcoming week in both college football and the NFL. Adam, let's begin, though. I want to start with what is just a spectacular night in the NFL. And this is, what a week this is. You have three games that are for first place in their own division. But tonight, you have the Lions and the Cowboys. You have the Cowboys, who I think you can make the argument has been the best team in the NFL over the last 3 weeks, especially that offense. They stay inside. They go to Detroit tonight. Lions had a chance to win on Thanksgiving. But now, Adam, a chance here for the winner to stay in the race and for the loser, especially if it's Dallas. Good luck trying to sneak in the back door to the playoffs.
There's no way 3 weeks ago that we thought this would essentially be a playoff play-in game.
Nope.
Right? Like, we thought the Lions were still the class of the NFC, and we thought that the hole in the Dallas defense you could drive a bus through. So it was ugly, that point for the Cowboys. But what have they done? They've managed to go from horrendous defensively to fine. And with the offense that they have, Jeff, that might just be enough for them here to get into the playoffs.
Just say this with the Dallas defense. I'll get back to the offense in a second. But Adam, you make the two big trades. But the Quinnen Williams deal that on the surface, and look, full disclosure for the listeners, I'm still relatively new to the company. The Jets are the team that I root for. And every single person in my Jet circles is like, the Sauce Gardner trade was, it's sad to see him go. It was great. The Quinnen Williams, because of the draft capital coming back, the Quinnen Williams trade, same deal. Sad to see a high-end player go, but the Jets stunk with those guys. They can stink without him for another few weeks. Quinnen Williams has regained his all-pro form, which I think had been missing. He had played well for the Jets this year, but it was not the all-pro form we had seen in the past with Quinnen. And he's been that in Dallas. And Adam, for a defense that you mentioned it, that I think I might have been able to get a few, average about 4.5 yards a carry against that defense, which for my lack of foot speed, that would be pretty good. But I think this deep, forget the offense, they've been the same the whole year. And it's part of the reason I like Dallas here tonight to win the game outright. I think that defense is going to be able to slow down Detroit, even in an indoor game like this.
And really, these days, all we're talking about is slowing down Detroit a little bit, because they have not been the juggernaut that we saw offensively out of them. I'm not here to talk about whether it's Ben Johnson or not. I think it goes deeper than that for them when it comes to the offensive line and the issues that they have there. But for the Dallas Cowboys coming into this game, I dare say you're playing with a bit of house money, because this team really was, again, not thought to be a competitor this year. And what we've seen out of them, as you mentioned about the defense, this is an offense led by Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, and the contract-seeking version of George Pickens that has been as good as any offense in the league. This is an offensive line that really hasn't been bad in a decade, and you have Dak Prescott playing at the best level he has. I could understand why you would feel confident about the Cowboys tonight.
Well, and keep in mind here, and Dallas was, as you mentioned earlier, just completely done. Like, it was over. It was over. Their defense is terrible. Dak is playing at this high level. Forget the wild card, which we'll get into the discussion a little bit later. I think there's a legitimate chance an 11-win team is sitting at home in the NFC playoffs when this is all said and done a month from now. But all of a sudden, this division with the Eagles flailing around here, a difficult game coming up on Monday night, even with the Justin Herbert broken hand, that's still a difficult game for Philadelphia. Adam, this is a game and a half on a Dallas in that NFC East. It's pretty crazy that it's come to that. We haven't really touched on the Lions. Amon-Ra St. Brown is still questionable tonight. We'll find out. We'll get that injury report in about an hour or so from now, so we'll be able to update y'all on that once that comes down. But it's just something. I don't know if it's, but like you said earlier, I don't know if it's Ben Johnson. I don't know if it's even missing Aaron Glenn on the defensive side of the ball. They just missed the juice, whatever that juice was from the last 2 years. And that's part of the reason that I like Dallas here tonight is just it feels like Detroit in these high against these high-end teams has not been the same. And Adam, they only have two one-score wins this year. One of them was week three at Baltimore, which might have well been three seasons ago at this point, with it being in week three. And unfortunately for you, the other one was against your New York Giants, who, of course, are the kings of blowing big leads in the fourth quarter this year.
Oh yeah, and we can pick at that scab later. But we're talking now about the Detroit Lions. Let's not undersell also the absence of Sam Laporta and what he meant to Jared Goff in that offense. And as you mentioned, Amon-Ra St. Brown seems to be trending toward not playing with that high ankle sprain for Detroit. And I would add in one more thing when we talk about the Lions, and you mentioned where they are after the last couple of years. Teams play a 17-game schedule, and the Lions have then also, they went to the NFC Championship game 2 years ago. They get knocked out in a slugfest against Washington last year in the divisional round. They've played a lot of football.
Yeah.
There's a team that has a lot of miles on it right now over the last couple of years, and you could understand why it's hard when you have that first-place schedule, especially year after year, to keep at the top level. That's how the NFL is designed, right? Like, the first place schedule is supposed to knock you down, and they've had the challenge of this division. Yeah, I realize Minnesota last year had a very good record, but I think this division is top to bottom tougher this year than it was last year.
Well, and keep in mind, you just mentioned Minnesota. Oh, the loss that could end up being, if Detroit does miss the playoffs, the loss that will have knocked them out is that loss at home to Minnesota. That's the one. Not if they lose to Chicago week 18, not the two losses to Green Bay even. It's the two losses to the 4-8 Minnesota Vikings and J.J. McCarthy, who, Adam, I saw a video on social media today of people trying to name how many quarterbacks can they name better than J.J. McCarthy right now, and the dude listed off 50, which I thought was a little bit aggressive, but it just, again, you can't lose that game if you're the Lions. Like I said, I like Dallas tonight. I think this is a game the Cowboys find a way. High scoring, to say the very least. Like, something like last week on Thanksgiving wouldn't shock me. Both of these teams played high scoring games last week, Adam.
Now you have me thinking through backup quarterbacks in the league, because I don't think we don't even need to bother with the other 31 starting quarterbacks. You'd take all of them over him, maybe not Shedeur Sanders, but you take all of them over J.J. McCarthy, and then you start going through and thinking to yourself, well, what, like, no-name serviceable backup would I also take over J.J.? Like, would I bring Chase Daniel out of retirement and take him over J.J. McCarthy, the ultimate backup quarterback? Like, which insurance commercial could I go grab one of those guys from where they're tapping on the shoulder and like, you can't get the bee's nest down. Come on in, Teddy Bridgewater, right? Like, that's the sort of thing we're talking about with Minnesota. Those those absolutely will be the losses Detroit will be looking back at.
So I will tell you real quick on that video, and I'll have to find it again and send it out myself. Zach Wilson was mentioned. I don't think that's right. I don't think that's right. Both Cleveland rookies were mentioned, which, all right, whatever you want to do. Bridgewater was mentioned, which I think is fine. They didn't mention Tyler Huntley, who I think is better than J.J. McCarthy at this point. But, hey, 50-plus, pretty impressive that it's even can even remotely name that many, say the very least, just on showing how bad it is in Minnesota right now. Adam, I want to get to the college football playoff discussion here for a few moments before we talk some Raiders in about 7 minutes from now. But just a quick reminder to everyone, UNLV in the Mountain West Championship game tomorrow here on ESPN Las Vegas. A little bit of a programming difference tomorrow. Cofield will be back. I'll be here as well. 2 to 4 for Cofield and company, leading you right in to Rebels pregame coverage right here at 4 o'clock Pacific time here in Las Vegas. 5, the kickoff, and of course, another rematch with Boise State for the Rebels' third consecutive season that UNLV beats Boise. Adam, I'm going to hold my pick for the game until tomorrow, but far and away the best I have felt about the Rebels going into the three matchups we've seen these last 3 years with the Broncos.
Yeah, that's 100% understandable, and that could be, and I'm sure you'll detail this when the time is right, but that could be about the UNLV offense. That could be about the state of Boise State overall right now. This is not the best Boise team that we've seen by a long shot. And overall, the one consistent thing that you've been able to say about the Rebels this year is they're probably going to put up points. Now, for a lot of the year, they've been allowing a lot of points as well. But you go up to Boise and you face, again, what is the least scary version you've seen of the Broncos in quite a long time. The ironic part, of course, for UNLV will be, as you mentioned, the playoff talk. This is the year where if they win the conference championship, they have probably the least chance of getting to the CFP.
Well, and it's a shame because, look, you go up to Boise while Maddox Mattson is healthy. All right, fine. That is what it is. UNLV defense wasn't playing well at the time as well. That loss to New Mexico, even though the Lobos ended up being really good. And quite frankly, Adam, I know that there's rules and tiebreakers as we see in the ACC as well. I would have loved to have seen the Mountain West just say, you know what? The computer said it was UNLV against New Mexico with the others leaving the conference, even if that's not what the computer spit out. But, hey, that's a different argument for a different time. But, you know, I'll just say this. Calandria has played at a level that if you told me Anthony Calandria would have been the Mountain West Offensive Player of the Year coming in, I could say, all right, yeah, sure, I could see that. I didn't expect him to play at this high of a level. And what this defense has done the last month since the disaster against New Mexico, they've been great. That's part of the reason I'm as confident as I am going into tomorrow night, and you're 100% right. If they were 11-1, they win tomorrow, leave it up to the committee, which maybe not is the best thing as this week has proven, but you would have at least had a shot, especially if Duke beats Virginia, because a 12-1 UNLV would have had a better resume than an 8-5 Duke, more likely than not. So, unfortunate for the Rebels in that regard. Adam, I want to take the temperature on this real quick. I have fully convinced myself, and this is always this always goes under the same moniker of when I assume, and we all know what that old saying is. I have fully convinced myself that if Alabama loses, despite being moved in front of Notre Dame this week, if Alabama loses, the committee is going to put Miami in over Alabama. Tell me I'm insane for thinking that.
All right, so let me ask you a question. Do you think that's a mistake? Do you think Miami in over a 3-loss Alabama is a mistake?
No. I think Miami is better than Oklahoma. I think Miami is better than Alabama. I think them and Notre Dame, if they played today, I would favor Notre Dame. But on a neutral, Miami could beat them. Absolutely a second time. And then, again, a lot of this is dependent on this is, of course, dependent on BYU losing to Texas Tech like I think they will. But, no, I don't think it'd be a mistake. I actually think it'd be the proper thing if Miami got an over 3-loss Alabama.
three-loss Alabama doesn't belong in the playoff. If you have multiple opportunities to show me that you can beat a top-four team in Georgia and you don't take advantage of any of them, then you're done. And you have to be done. What's the whole idea of trying to figure out what a playoff team is, right? How do you think they would perform against the best teams in the country? Alabama is not one of the best teams in the country this year. Georgia is one of the best teams in the country this year. If you don't show up, and by show up, I mean win. I don't mean this garbage that we hear about, well, if it's a close loss, if Alabama shows they can hang. I don't care about that because I've already seen with Miami, the high end of Miami, the good of Miami, I think, is better than the good of Alabama, and the record will have borne it out.
100% agree. We'll visit this again later because I have more on Alabama, but we gotta hit a quick break. When we get back, we talk about the Raiders. Who's untouchable, and how do the Raiders stack up against the bottom teams in the NFL alongside them when we get back? Cofield and Company, ESPN Las Vegas.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Company taking over here today is Jeff Parles, Adam Candy here on ESPN Vegas. Cofield, I don't know if he's on the ground yet in Boise. Might be. Well, we'll hear from him in the 5 o'clock hour. Matt Nevard will be joining him, and then we'll actually hear boots on the ground from Cofield in that 5 o'clock hour. But now, Adam Candy, it's a perfect segue. We just heard from Pete Carroll in the update, leading us back in. And before we get to what I think will be, quite frankly, a decimation on Sunday, a game that the Broncos might not actually trail before coming back and win for the first time, seemingly the whole year. This has been a year where I thought the Raiders were genuinely going to be able to compete for a playoff spot, probably come up short because they're in the worst possible division to be in the AFC. And obviously this has turned into what is just such an epic train wreck that part of this discussion will be should the head coach be one and done. But Adam, I just want to look at this first. Looking through this roster and what is going to be probably now a multi-year rebuild that includes a rookie quarterback being on the team next year, who should 100% not be tradable at this point for the Raiders? Is there even anyone on the roster that should be untouchable?
I'm going to tell you, I don't think we should get off the amount we can count on one hand.
Oh.
When it comes to making this decision for next year. And it's going to come down mostly to talking about how much money do they cost and what do they offer in terms of viability for the future. Because to me, the list of completely hang up the phone, don't talk to me guys begins and ends with Brock Bowers. I don't need to talk about anybody beyond Brock Bowers if the question is just going to be, what do I do if the person calls me? Because you might be thinking, not you, Jeff, but you out there might be thinking, but what about Max Crosby? Well, I think they should have traded Max Crosby this trade deadline and maximized his value, because what did I say at that time, Jeff? I said, what you're risking with a guy who plays 110% at all times is that if you want to trade Max Crosby this offseason, you might be trying to trade him headed toward 30 coming off a third consecutive season hampered by injury. What happened to Max Crosby today? He went from limited to did not practice. Mm-hmm. And we're again heading toward that part of the year where a guy who tries to power through every little piece of the injury bug might not be able to do it. So look, there are some pieces down the roster that we could probably have a discussion about, right? Like, if you want to talk to me about some of the pieces like Jackson Powers Johnson at the money that he's making, sure. I can have that discussion with you. But it also doesn't include Ashton Jeanty, because you had to pay Ashton Jeanty top of the market money to draft him at number 6. So he's already making top 10 running back money right now. Right now. So if we're really tearing down this roster, why not see what you could get for a guy like Ashton Jeanty, who a lot of teams will probably look at and say, hey, you know what? This guy was pretty amazing coming out of college. He just hasn't really had an opportunity yet in the NFL. How about you? You got a longer list than me?
You and I did not talk about what our list was going into the show.
Correct.
Just so everyone out there knows this, when I say you and I have the exact same one person on the list, and that is it. And I'm not saying, oh, they should be go out of their way to move Ashton Jeanty or even Colton Miller or JPJ or anything along those lines, or even going out of your way and taking less than what the market would want to get for Max. But this team, the one thing I've learned, and Adam, you and I, for our favorite teams, we have watched a lot of bad football over, for you, the last decade. For me, since I was a senior in high school, was the last time the New York Jets made the playoffs. What is the one thing that needs to be done when it's clearly not working? And it's been, look, this has been a beyond disaster for the Raiders, but this goes back to last year as well. You need to be quick in making your decisions and starting fresh in this league when it's clearly not working. And that's why the New York teams have been stuck in this. And this is, quite frankly, why the Raiders have been stuck in this with two playoff appearances in 25 years. Like, let's be real with ourselves. This is why the Raiders have been stuck in this. Well, I'll make it 20 years. I don't want to go all the way back. We'll make it 20 years. I know. But this is why they've been stuck, where they haven't been a real threat. They haven't been able to compete in an AFC West that has just flipped who's at the top through the years with the Chargers, then the Broncos, and now this run that Kansas City is on where it's going to end this year going back to Denver. I would only trade Brock Bowers, unless if someone offers me something so outrageous like the Colts did for Sauce Gardner, I'm not even listening. That would be the only way I'd even consider listening to Bowers. If someone is like, hey, we'll give you, what, two back end first for Brock Bowers? All right, sure. Yeah, no tight end is worth that in this league. But he's the only one that is like, okay, you can build around him. You have the best tight end in football with a rookie quarterback next year, Adam? That's a pretty good piece to start with. So he's the only one. And then, Adam, just to pull this all together of, how do the Raiders look against the other bottom feeders that they're going to be realistically competing for in drafting a quarterback at the top of this draft? Look, the other bad teams, Tennessee, not going to be drafting quarterback. New Orleans, I don't know what they know about, what they feel about Shuck, but he's looked okay since taking over. Cleveland, who knows what they decide to do. By the way, did you see that Deshaun Watson's IR practice window opened the other day, Adam? Did you see they opened that? I actually started laughing when I saw that.
It's impossible to think about Deshaun Watson anymore. Like, it just doesn't even feel real.
No, that's how I felt. It was like, oh, they actually may want him to play this year, which is kind of an indictment of their own quarterback situation. Then the Raiders, and then the two New York teams. Adam, who are the Raiders better set up than of the bottom of the league right now? And that's a serious question. I'm not sure. Because, like, the Titans, in theory, you have the quarterback in place. Same with the Giants. The Jets have all this draft capital. Like, what? Who are they even better set up than at this point?
They're not better set up than anyone. You'd even take the Titans because of Cam Ward, right? Like, you'd even take that roster. And if you're out here saying, well, Max Crosby is a Raider for life, you want to build around him. Y'all, if you're a Raiders fan and you want to talk to me about Max Crosby, talk to me about how many winning records they've had with Max Crosby. He has been an elite player pretty much from the day he walked into the league 7 years ago. They have one winning record and one playoff appearance and zero playoff wins with Max Crosby.
And look, I love Max Crosby. He's actually gotten to the point where on a league-wide scale, he's gotten underrated, in my opinion, Adam. I think he actually has, but that's in part because of, look at the team he's played on. That has just been so dreadful in this year, as dreadful can be, with that 2-10 record, that I would be shocked if it doesn't go to 2-11 after this weekend with the rematch in Denver, or here in Vegas against Denver, I should say. All right, Adam Candy gets to potentially be insufferable here in our next segment. We get to go to the association. Giannis on the move. Can the Knicks even possibly pull it off? Or is it someone else? Adam and I discuss next. Cofield & Company, ESPN Las Vegas.
Now back to Cofield & Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Xavier Pope is going to be joining the show in about 12 minutes from now. Always a fun conversation with EP. He joins us soon, 12 minutes from now. I'm Jeff Parles. Adam Candy is here. We got the company taking over here on Cofield & Company here today. We'll hear from Cofield in the 5 o'clock hour from Boise, Idaho. Adam, have you ever been to Boise?
Many a time, sir.
Yeah, that is one place. And again, I am newer to the West Coast than you and others here at the station, obviously. That is one place I need to get to, even if it's just a nice little short weekend.
I'm telling you, downtown Boise is underrated. You've heard Cofield and I have covered this before. You can have yourself a fine weekend in Boise. I know a lot of people drag it, maybe more for what they hear from Broncos fans than for the city itself, but I like it there.
Yeah, so that's on the Pacific Northwest. It's only Seattle for me. That's the only one I've been. I gotta get that whole region of the country sooner rather than later now being out here. Well, that was just me trying to distract from the insufferable nature that's going to come from Mr. Candy here in a second here. Because, Adam, we had been waiting a while for... Well, not a Woj is gone. It's now just Shams Charania. The report from Shams that Giannis was going to want to be out of Milwaukee, and that report came yesterday that the Bucks and Giannis and his camp are exploring if it's the best for him to stay in Milwaukee and so on and so forth. We know how this likely ends. Of course, naturally, Giannis hurts himself last night. He's out 2 to 4 weeks with a calf injury. For a moment there, we're kind of scared, like, oh, is it an Achilles? But it's a calf after what they said last night. So, Adam, I'm going to give you the floor. There was an article on ESPN earlier today that had 5 potential trade destinations and the trade packages for Giannis Antetokounmpo, and one of them was your New York Knicks. Make the case if it is even remotely plausible here after that ridiculous 5 first-round pick trade for Mikal Bridges a year ago.
Bing bong! That's about what I got to say to you, buddy. Orange and blue skies. We saw the report in the offseason that Giannis made clear. And in my mind, I don't care what the article actually said. In my mind, he sent a signed letter to Bucks ownership and said, if you ever trade me, New York or nowhere. Just like the little bags that all the girls in New York City wear over their shoulder. New York or nowhere. Giannis has his own. It's in his head. He's coming, baby. He's coming. He's going to be a New York Knick. It's going to be Jalen Brunson running the pick and roll with Giannis and Antetokounmpo. I don't care that they don't have draft picks to trade because they sent them all out for Mikal Bridges. I'm not mad. This isn't about what we do have. This isn't about what we don't have. It's about what we're going to have. We're going to have Giannis because there's nothing the Bucks want more than Karl Anthony Towns, right? Right?
Sure.
They got to have him. They got to have him. They spent the whole offseason enticed not only by the three-point shooting, by the more aggressive nature that we've seen out of him this year. They love the spicy cat videos. They love them. They know their fans will love them. Oh, my God. Yeah. They love all of it. They love everything the cat's going to bring to Milwaukee. They already know he thrives right next door in Minnesota. That means they know he's an upper Midwest kind of guy. He can deal with the cold. All of this is perfect. And I love how Giannis played right into what we need out of him. He's already doing what we need as a New York Knicks fan. He deflated his trade value yesterday with this air quotes calf strain. Calf strain. No way am I trading Trae Young for a guy who can't stay on the court. I wouldn't do it. If I'm the San Antonio Spurs, do I want to send out all those draft picks for another guy who's just this tall, skinny, can't stay on the court? No. No. New York or nowhere, buddy. New York or nowhere. I don't care that everybody else has a better package because the Knicks can only send pick swaps out. I care that Giannis wants to be a Knick. Now he wants to be traded, and we're going to be celebrating a championship in New York. Well, I don't know exactly when because the Thunder are 21-1. But other than that, it's going great.
You know, I'll just say this. I did find it comical in the article on ESPN.com that Jericho Sims somehow found his way back to the Knicks also.
Isn't that great? That was
I enjoyed that thoroughly. By the way, just so people are aware, so this article that Adam and I were referring to, five destinations and five potential trades that would for Giannis that would shake up the title race. The one that the article, I think, I don't want to say it was pushing because it wasn't really pushing anything, was the Atlanta deal, which Jalen Johnson is the best player in the NBA that no one seems to be talking about on a national scale right now. Legitimately was averaging close to a triple-double over the last month. Giannis, and this is the Northern New Jersey guy just out of the shadows of New York coming out of me now too, Adam. Giannis in Atlanta is not sexy. Giannis in San Antonio, as fun as that would be with him and Wemby, not sexy. You really want to put Giannis in Houston with Kevin Durant? Come on. We don't want that.
No.
And then the last one was Golden State, which, by the way, that trade has no chance of happening, the one that they had where it was basically Kuminga and Draymond and a bunch of other picks. That's not happening, so we can wipe that out. But I'm with you, Adam. I would love to see it, but it is very New York Knicks that they managed to send out all those picks for Mikal Bridges, and it could cost them Giannis Antetokounmpo in the end. It is very much Knicks.
It is. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not Andrea Bargnani or Eddie Curry or any of the, you know, truly heinous things that we've seen in the past from the New York Knicks. But I'll say this much, Jeff. It's totally happening. He's coming to New York. Bing bong.
Adam, we have come a long way in New York basketball in just a short period of time where the Brooklyn Nets were seemingly going to take over the spotlight. And then they really talk about when we refer to a team doing it in their name fashion. Talk about the Nets finding a way to pull a Nets with what they did with Harden and Durant and Kyrie. And now it's the Knicks. It was never not the Knicks town. Never not. Despite what some Net fans were trying to say. But, boy, you send Giannis there, Eastern Conference Championship right away. Even if they don't have Giannis, it still might be an Eastern Conference Championship right away this year. But, as you said, might not be that quick on winning a title because, Adam, I think the Thunder are going 76-6 at this rate. That's how good they are. I know that doesn't mean a championship, as the Warriors proved a decade ago, but, boy, that team is just so, so good and so deep and they're only getting healthier. Oh, and by the way, the Thunder might have three lottery picks in this upcoming draft, too. So good luck to everybody on that. All right, when we get back, our good friend Xavier Pope, he joins us next. We'll get his thoughts. He actually said something on social about Giannis and Wemby together. And discussing the weird end to Chris Paul's tenure with the Clippers and more. Xavier Pope next on Cofield & Company.
Now back to Cofield & Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Cofield & Company on a Thursday. Company is taking over. Jeff Piles, Adam Candy, in for Cofield, who is officially boots on the ground in Boise. So, Boise State, UNLV, Mountain West title game. You can hear that here tomorrow here on ESPN Las Vegas. 5 o'clock kickoff, 4 o'clock pregame show with Cofield & Company starting at 2 tomorrow. So be on the lookout for that here on ESPN Vegas. Adam, before we bring Xavier Pope in, Amon-Ra St. Brown officially in tonight. Officially in. So
that is a huge win for the Lions because it had not been trending that way this week. So adjust accordingly.
Tough dude. High ankle sprain 6.5 days ago and now back in against the Cowboys in a gotta-have-it spot for the Lions. Xavier Pope joins us right now. EP, good to hear from you here today.
Likewise, guys. How's it going?
Good. I want to start where Adam and I were in the last segment, because Adam, unabashed Knick fan, fully making the case for Giannis Antetokounmpo being traded to the Knicks. But Xavier, you on the threads the other day brought up the combination that I thought was the most interesting, and that was the potential of Giannis Antetokounmpo and Victor Wembanyama being paired together in San Antonio if that trade were to come down.
Yeah, you're hearing all the different wild scenarios, you know, being that Giannis deleted, you know, a lot of his Bucks-related social media posts and things of that nature. Of course, Adam, being a Knicks fan, like every other New York Knicks fan, wants everything to go their way. Really doesn't go that way for the Knicks. But just having two guys 7 feet tall with all the different skill sets that Giannis and Wimby provide, that would be just an insane combination. And because now that we've moved, it seems like the Rockets moving to, you know, with now tall ball, you know, you're getting tall ball to San Antonio. So it'll be a really interesting combination with those two guys. I think it's exciting. Two guys who love having the ball in their hand and could really dominate some teams. San Antonio have shown that they could potentially be a contender and make a lot of noise. So that would be a really cool combination for me.
The other big NBA news this week, and it was bizarre. Middle of the night, Chris Paul gets sent home from Atlanta and then released a few minutes later after that Instagram post came up. For a guy who, look, the Clippers are still irrelevant in the grand scheme of things, and for a guy who took them to the playoffs and nearly took them to the Western Conference Finals before they finally made it a few years ago. This is, I mean, they just did him as dirty as humanly possible.
Yeah, there's no NBA fan you can talk to, unless those who genuinely just hate Chris Paul, maybe some of his antics on the court, feel maybe he rubs some players or the management the wrong way. Think that having a Hall of Fame player who put your franchise pretty much on the map, help to increase the value of that franchise and basically made them a competitive team that you think that can be competitive every single year. That's not what my growing up you saw the Clippers as. They were a moribund franchise that were a second-rate team in L.A. And him in Lob City bringing the attention to that franchise, getting sent home in the middle of the night, having Ty Lue say it is what it is when he's asked about it, just felt just wrong. I mean, that was the only reason he signed with the team over the summer was to give his farewell tour. There are other places he could have gone. He could have gone to Houston. The Bucks wanted him. Think about the Chris Paul's impact when he went during Hurricane Katrina when the New Orleans Hornets, now the New Orleans Pelicans, had to go to play in Oklahoma City for a year, bringing attention to basketball in that city. I don't think the Oklahoma City Thunder would have existed but for the fact Chris Paul even went to that town to play for a year. So I just think that his impact is just too big to just do him dirty like that. And they are asked about it, and Ty Lue said this wasn't because of his play on the court. And so it just seemed like a really just classless move by that organization.
The part I don't get, man, is the Clippers have been, as you mentioned, moribund. They have been the second-rate franchise in Los Angeles for the longest of times. And all I have to do to compare and contrast is to say the way the Lakers handled Kobe at the end of Kobe's career, Kobe didn't deserve the contract he got at the end of his time with the Lakers based solely on his current play on the court. But they knew what an icon he was in LA for that franchise. And Chris Paul might not have been that for the Clippers, but in terms of what he meant to the Clippers, come on, man. Like, how could you come out and do it that way to him when the franchise across town that you are always playing little brother to showed you the way to handle this?
And especially when you see what happened early in the year with the, you know, how things were handled in terms of Kawhi Leonard and maybe some shady dealing in order to get him signed off the court. And it just seems like they just rubs me the wrong way, rubs fans the wrong way. And, you know, fans talk about how unloyal players are and team and players jumping ship and joining one another. Well, now you know why. Now you know that LeBron James has moved the way he's moved. Now you know why Kevin Durant has moved the way he's moved. James Harden announced the Clippers has moved the way he's moved because teams don't really have the loyalty that fans would like to say players should have.
Xavier Pope with us right now, Cofield and Company, ESPN Las Vegas. EP, I want to go to something that when I first saw it, I thought it was, again, another one of the, like, oh, social media is getting me again. What's going on with Bud Crawford and the fact that they're taking away his belt over fees? Like, what are we doing here for boxing?
Yeah, it's supposed to be taking away his sanction fees. And my first question was, what type of notice did they give him that he didn't pay the fees and they're going to strip the belt, WCB belt, from him? That's what I needed to know. I don't know all the details of just other than the sanctioning fees he didn't pay, but that just seems like out of the blue for something that you just don't hear that every day. And already people have complained about how, you know, with the Paul brothers and how boxing has been cheapened, and it's even hard to see a really big fight that you can get up for that's an actual fight of two competitive fighters fighting against one another. It puts another stain on a sport that's already waning in terms of people's expectation of the sport being a legitimate sport.
Well, it also kind of feels like when they take away a championship in college athletics, we all saw it. We all saw Crawford win that fight with ease against Canelo, which, again, the judges still thought it was close, even though I never thought it was. But, hey, that's boxing for you in 2025. EP, two more before we let you go. Quick hitters. Bears and Packers, biggest Chicago Bear regular season game in how long?
You got to go back to 6, 7, 8 years for the Chicago Bears. I mean, you're playing against the Packers for first place in the NFC North. If the Bears lose, Packers go up a game on the Bears. Bears win, they go up a game and a half on the Packers if they have a tie on their record. So it's a big time game, and definitely people are excited around Chicago and want to see the Bears at the top of the NFC North, top of the NFC, and keep going like that.
Do you think they win?
Tough one, because this is the second tough game of this rough set of games that they have. I think the Bears will pull it out.
Well, that would be a nice game and a half lead with a game to go, too, with a win on that. And then, EP, last one. Saw you said this on Threads. You thought the Super Bowl odds were a little bit off.
Yeah, because first and foremost, the number one team in the NFC right now isn't even a top 10. they had second the Seattle Seahawks. They were ahead of the Eagles, the defending Super Bowl champions. And the Patriots were down where they were. That was a weird ranking. And I want to go out. I don't really gamble that much, but today you want to put out some money because it looks like some good odds for people to take advantage of.
He's Xavier Pope. You hear him every Thursday here on Cofield and Company. EP, thank you as always. Thanks for hanging with us today.
Love you guys.
Xavier Pope, everyone. Adam, we'll have a little bit of a bigger discussion on that Bear-Packer game. It is one of the more fascinating regular season games I can remember because the Bears are just so disrespected by the markets and pretty much everyone. And, hey, they win this game. They are in complete command with two home games left against Detroit and Green Bay coming up through the month of December. Hour number two comes your way next. We're going to see if Adam Candy is excited about the World Cup draw coming tomorrow. We're going to see. I'm curious. I don't know how big of a soccer guy Adam is. And a new Boston Red Sox opening his mouth.